You're listening to a Castaway Media podcast. Find more great shows at castaway.media or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/castawaypodcasts.
This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
Along to Retro Asylum. This is Matt on the mic hosting tonight. Alongside me, I've got Dean, Swain, and Mads Christensen. How are you doing, fellas?
Not bad. Yourself?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, on this quite hot, sweaty evening in the UK, and you're hot and sweaty in your shed, aren't you, Dean?
I am, yes. I've got the door open, so I'll probably be attacked by a load of moths and bugs. So.
How about you, Mads? What's it doing over in Denmark?
Yeah, it's quite hot here as well. It's pretty good that it's not a video podcast, actually.
You're not sitting in your pants, are you, Mads?
I'm not going to answer that question.
You are.
Blimey, you heard it here first, listeners. Mads is naked, almost. Not the kind of podcast, that one. What's the season doing at the moment in Denmark? Is it turning into autumn like it kind of is here, just about in the UK?
It seemed to be for a couple of days, but now the heat is back, so it's very nice.
It's very strange weather here in the southeast. It's been overcast all day, but really, really muggy.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Yeah, it's stuffy. It's really stuffy. Yeah. Tonight. But anyway, yeah. People don't want to hear about that.
No, so, this is not the weather report.
The aim of this podcast, a couple of weeks ago, we put out on Twitter that we wanted you to choose some games for us to play because there was an insinuation, and I'm saying this tongue in cheek, there was an insinuation on the forum that we didn't play games enough and report back on them. So, we put it over to you guys to tell us what to play, and we picked four out of a hat. You might have seen me do that on YouTube if you watched the YouTube video, looking incredibly awkward. And the games we pulled out were Turtles on the NES, Epidia on the Amiga, or however you say it, Road Rash 2 on the Mega Drive, and the mighty PC Fuzz on the Commodore 64.
What a game.
So thank you. I think we're going to come on to some opinions about that shortly. But thank you very much for choosing those games. There were sort of 30, 35 games. I think it's a nice concept as a podcast, actually, to do in the future. So we'll come on to those shortly. And it's going to be a podcast of, for you, one half, for us as the presenters, two halves, because I'm going to kind of disappear and Steve is going to appear later on. By the magic of recording, we'll get him in the studio somehow, shape or form. Anyway, we've got some news. What have you picked out, Maz, for some news?
Well, I found this piece of news on retrocollect.com that Darksoft is working on a new GU MVS and AES flash cartridge. And that's pretty interesting news for someone like me. I mean, the cornerstone of my retro gaming collection is my Sega New Astro City cabinet, and I have a new GU board for that as well. So I've been picking up a few new GU games along the way, but they are getting really expensive. So having a flash cartridge, like an EverDrive, for my new GU would be just perfect. And this isn't actually news. It's been revealed like a year ago, but it seems that now he's nearing completion. So that's excellent news for me. The only problem is the price point, actually. So it's probably supposed to be around $400 upon release, and that's a steep price point, of course. But it'll probably get better with time.
That is a lot, but it's just like the games, isn't it, on the Neo Geo? Always been expensive. It's just kind of following that trend a little bit. Do you think it's going to push up the price of the consoles as well?
It'll probably push up the price of the new Geo MVS boards because they are normally still quite cheap, but the AES is already really expensive.
What's the difference between them?
Well, the MVS is the one, the boards that you used for the JAMA arcade machine. So it's a JAMA board that you put inside your arcade machine. And the AES is the consoleized version.
Yeah, okay. I've never played one. Not in the flesh.
Okay.
I've played some games on emulators. Never played one in the flesh. It'd be great to get. I mean, obviously, you're going to get one of these things, but it'd be brilliant to have one of these. Dean, you ever had a Neo Geo, played on one?
I wish. Well, I've played on one a few times, and especially the arcade version, but yes, it's kind of out of my reach, the home console version. Probably because of the games as well, the price does put me off quite a bit. And to be honest, I've never been a massive fan of all of the games. So there's a few on there that I like, but not enough to actually buy the system.
I mean, there was one series of games that meant that I had to get a new Geo machine back in the day, and that was Metal Slug. I just loved the Metal Slug series. So that was enough for me to invest in a new Geo board. And I've got most of the Metal Slug games already on the MVS cartridges, but I think the price point has now gotten so high that I'm not going to be buying a lot more MVS cartridges anymore. So something like this is just perfect.
How much are they going for now? Sorry,
okay.
Well, it depends on the game, of course, but you can easily be paying £200 for an MVS game today. But just a couple of years ago, the MVS cartridges were quite cheap. I bought a lot of good games for about 10 quid, 20 quid, so...
It doesn't make sense to keep buying games when this kind of solution comes out, unless you're an avid collector. I'm not a collector of games really at all. You know, I love having the systems, but I'm quite happy having an EverDrive type solution. And I've always thought about when I'm buying, or when I did buy some Mega Drive games, I thought, why don't I just save my money and get an EverDrive? Because you can pick them up for sort of £70 on the Mega Drive. So it kind of doesn't make sense, does it? And certainly the Neo Geo, it makes perfect sense to buy this flash cart when it comes out.
Yeah, I've come to the realization that I'm not a collector either. I do have a lot of games here, but I like playing the games, so I don't want to just look at the boxes. So an EverDrive is great for me as well. I've got lots of those already.
Where are you on the scale, Dean? Collector? Player?
Well, on all my computer systems now, except for the Amstrad 6128, I have actually got SD card solutions for all of them. The Commodore 64, the Commodore Amiga, the Atari XL, even my Spectrum. So it's certainly the way I'm going. I haven't got any for the consoles yet, apart from the Vectrex, which has got a multi-cart in it, which I can upload any number of, well, not any number of ROMs, but all the current available games I've got on there. So, yeah, certainly the way I'm going. I am looking to get a Mega Drive EverDrive. So, yeah, it's... Like you, I've got a lot of games, but they're not in the greatest condition, some of them are, but yeah, I'm not really a collector of the games, you know. I haven't got a nice setup where they're all on a shelf and they all look pretty. Like you guys, I'm more into playing them rather than watching them on a shelf.
Yeah,
doesn't
I
do
think
much for me.
Being precious about it is great, and I think collecting's an amazing thing to
if
do.
If you've got the money in the room, go for it. It does look smart. You see a lot of these pictures online of people's games rooms, and they've got all the games on the shelves. It looks amazing. And yes, if I had the money and I could do it, I probably would. Mm. But I haven't got that option.
And I noticed that there's been recent news about a Saturn flash card or similar. Some guy, he's a musician, I think, and he started hacking around in one of the ports on the back of the console. And, yeah, I think he's found a way to get a flash card or some way to break the copy protection on the disc. So I'm expecting we will see ISOs flying around for the Saturn in the near future, which will be brilliant. Because I've got a Saturn. It's been sat in storage for 4 years since I got it for Christmas. I don't think I've played it since Christmas Day when I got it because I've got very few things on it. But games are so damn expensive for the Saturn, unless you're buying the not so good games, but you want to buy any of the good shooters on it, and you're sort of 60, 70 quid a pop, aren't you? And I'm not willing to pay that for a game, personally.
Yeah, I've not got many games for my Saturn. In fact, I think what's in there at the moment? Probably Sega Rally. That stays in there. It's a Sega Rally machine.
and that's cheap as chips, isn't it?
That's as common as Mux. So, you can get that out fairly easy. But I do enjoy the game, so it does get its use.
I'm a little bit nonplussed about that game on the Saturn. Anyway, that's a different story altogether. Just I so love the arcade machine.
Quite the same, is it? Let's face it.
No, it's not. It's a bit choppy frame rate. The controller doesn't do it justice.
I've got Sega Rally on the PS2 Japanese release.
Ooh.
And it is arcade perfect, apart from, obviously, the steering wheel.
Is it really? I might have to, yes. Might have to invest in that.
So speaking of Sega Rally, I actually played that just a couple of days ago. a four-player cap set up. I was having a birthday for one of my kids, and we were at this playground, and they had a small arcade. And well, turns out I'm not very good at Sega Rally anymore. I lost. I got beaten by an 8-year-old girl.
Really?
Yeah.
Hang your head, sir. That is no good at all. It's a great, such a classic game in the arcade, though. Such a classic game. Well, that's, well, back to the Neo Geo. Sounds absolutely brilliant for all the Neo Geo fans out there and people who've got consoles. I'm sure you're going to be saving up mads for that. Other news, there has been a Kickstarter, or Kickstarter announced, it's not been released onto Kickstarter just yet. New keycaps for the Amiga. And I think this is by the same people who recently did the Kickstarter for the new cases on the A1200. I think they're A1200 keys. Might be doing the other models, but I don't think it's been specified yet. I've ordered one of the cases, so I'm looking forward to getting that through, and apparently production's starting real soon on that one. So I'm excited to get a really pristine case, although I've gone for a dark grey, I think it was, I went for. So I went for something a little bit out there, because I've got a very clean 1200 keys as well. I thought I'd do something a little bit different. But the keycaps, I think that's a really... If you could be bothered to take all the keys off a keyboard, which is going to be mind-numbingly boring, but it's less mind-numbingly boring than taking them off and retro-brighting them, isn't it? So I think this is a nice little Kickstarter to come out soon.
So what and options have they got, Matt?
There's coloured. There is coloured, much like the cases, there is coloured caps as well. And I think... I don't know if it's for other systems. I'm desperately trying to find the article now. It's 1200. It's for the A1200, and there are different colours as well. I don't know whether that just goes for the sort of like the Amiga keys and the Alt keys, or whether that's across the board. I don't think it's been fully announced yet. It has black, white, and purple.
Ooh!
Ah. So you get some real funky thing going on there. But I don't know about you. I'm not sure I really fancy taking all the keys off. It's a fiddly process.
I should imagine that's a job and a half.
Going to take its toll, isn't it? But you know, for people who want a nice clean one, especially the white ones, I was really lucky. I went to a vintage computer fair, Bletchley Museum up in Milton Keynes back in 2010, and they had an Amiga marquee outside hosted by some of the Amiga community, and Amiga Kit were there selling brand new keyboards for the 1200 for £20. So I picked one of them up, and it obviously pristine, brand new. What I regret is they actually had 1200s for sale there for about £120. Why I didn't do that.
Well, you can't pick them up for that price now, that's for sure.
Second hand. These were brand spanking new as well. Amazing. Fresh sealed. Oh, just so gutting that I never did that.
The Amiga really has gone up in price, hasn't it?
I'm seeing it with everything actually right now. But yeah, the Amiga has certainly rocketed. CD32, Mad, you probably know that from your reviewing.
Yeah, I just saw today, what was it, Little Devil, or Little Devil, however you pronounce that, for sale for, I think it was £107 it was at right now on eBay. So even the games are getting really expensive.
Utterly mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't get, do we ever think it'll ever go down again? Do you think there's going to be a demand drop-off, or is this just...
Probably once we're all dead and gone.
Yeah. I think
no
probably...
one else will be interested.
I think probably for the CD-based machines, they'll all die out eventually. So just in 10 years, we won't be able to read any of the CDs anymore. So probably the market for those games will go down then.
It's just nuts, isn't it? I remember trying to buy a CD32 about 3 or 4 years ago and regretting then not doing it as well, because you could pick one up for £30 to £40. Nice condition. And now, you know, CD32, you can't get less for 100.
No.
Probably even more than that. And the games, like you just said, Mads, is just mad crazy. I don't get it. But anyway, keycaps for the Amiga 1200 coming soon on Kickstarter. Hasn't been fully released as yet, because I think they're waiting until the production of the cases start.
Yeah, that's what I read as well.
Yeah, but it looks really good. The guys who are doing this, they have released videos of the tooling and the production process so far. So I'm really confident it's going to come through and it's going to be really good. And they've got on the cases, they've got cutouts for like a GoTech and for a GoTech display. And they've got extra ports on the back as well, extra like cutouts on the back. So they're really doing it properly. And I think I wish them all the success in this keycaps as well.
So funny thing is, I was really tempted to buy one of those cases when they had their Kickstarter, but I didn't want to buy it because there weren't any new keycaps anyway. So I would only get to replace half of my Amiga 1200. It wouldn't seem new. So now I may consider it again.
I think think so, and I hope they do. I hope the case is going to be available for general sale as well, because then the likes of you are going to be able to really pick it up, which is great news. Great news all around. So that's coming soon on Kickstarter. We've got another bit of Commodore news as well. I think we've got two more bits of Commodore news. So moving away from that computer we've mentioned so many times before on the podcast, which we won't mention this podcast, Aideen.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. What was that called again? Anyway, back to Commodore news. Commodore are back in Germany, so to speak. Individual computers who have, I must admit, I'm not too up on this story, but they have released a lot of Commodore stuff in the past. They did a motherboard for the C64 last year, motherboard reloaded, which I think had extra ports on it. It had spaces to put different chips in, so you could put different or new chips into it, which was, and they were socketed rather than hard soldered onto the circuit board. I'm not quite sure the technical terminology around that. So they've done some stuff in the past, which is Commodore, and now they've licensed the Commodore name, God knows who from, and they're releasing Commodore 64C cases, so the sort of sleeker looking Commodore 64 cases with Commodore badging on it, which is great, isn't it? But where have they got that license from, I wonder?
Well, I think the license has probably been moved around so many times, I wouldn't know where they've got it. I'm kind of disappointed that there isn't cases for the original, because the bread bin. I've got. Mm. Yeah, the bread bin.
Yeah, yeah, they should do both.
Mine isn't discoloured, but I guess a lot of people...
Can you discolour an old one?
Probably not, no. Already brown. I guess some people would like to renew their old bread bin cases. So it'd be nice to have the option of both. But yes, you're right, they do look very smart.
I think we're in this wonderful golden era at the moment of new old stuff coming out. You've got that computer that we won't mention at all on this podcast at all, honestly, Governor. We've got the C64, which I think you guys might have mentioned on the previous podcast and we've mentioned before. All right, it's nowhere near up there with the Spectrum Next, but it's still good that it's coming out at some stage. We've got all these new cases. I think it's brilliant. And, you know, like Mads has said, we've got a flash cart coming out for the Neo Geo. It's really, it's coming of age, isn't it? Completely coming of age. I think it's brilliant. For the consumer,
there's a lot of options out there, isn't there, for the consumer now?
Yeah. I think so. And I think it's good that we've got those kind of options. And I don't know, do you think it's bringing through a new sort of market, or is this purely for us geeks who are into it because we love retro gaming?
I think there is a market, as I've mentioned many times before, with a lot of these other systems, something like the Vega, where it's people who reminisce and give them a try. And then they probably put these devices back in the cupboard or sell them at a car boot sale, what have you. But yeah, there is definitely a market now for us collectors, I think, who might want to change things up a bit. I love the idea of a new case for my Amiga, but it's not going to be the original then. And it depends, I guess, on the state of the machine and how authentic it looks. You know, if you can't tell the difference, then great.
Well, apparently all these new cases are from the original mould, so
yeah,
they should be spot on, should be, yeah, you know. But I'm worried about the Amiga logo on it, because I'm not sure whether that was on the original mould or whether that's stamped in afterwards.
I think that's actually a badge that fits on after, because you had the Epson-style ones, didn't you?
Well, you had... No, because there's on the actual... On one side of the 1200, you've got the Amiga logo, and on the other side, you've got the badge that was stuck on. Do you remember that?
I've got my Amiga right next to me.
Newsflash from Dean.
Yes, sorry. I'm just going to plug everything. I can't because I've screwed the bloody...
Bear with us, listeners. It sounds like he's coding a new case there in the background.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Commodore Amiga sign on the left-hand side is actually a badge that comes off. I might be wrong.
But on the other side, you've got a stamp, haven't you?
On the other side, you've actually got the engraved Amiga bit, yeah.
So I think that's the only bit that could possibly go wrong, because that's quite intricate, isn't it? If that was stamped on afterwards in the Commodore factory.
I think they'll manage it. See, I've actually butchered mine a bit with the old GoTek drive in it, so...
Is that in the 1200?
Yes, I took the original disk drive out, and you had to take off a little bit of plastic to...
You didn't do that.
I did. I'm going to get hate mail now.
I've got my GoTek drive just, outside of the casing instead. I couldn't get myself to saw a bit off it.
Mm. See, so this
tell
is,
me,
Amiga that I've got, sorry, Matt.
No, go on.
It's not my original. If it had been my original machine that I bought with my own cash, you know, way back when, then I probably wouldn't have butchered it. But this was another one that I had lying about, so...
Yeah, that sentimental attachment to the original one stay in good nick, does it? So what's the attraction with those GoTex over a compact flash solution side or an SD solution side?
In all honesty, they're cheaper.
Well, they're completely different as well. I mean, with the compact flash card, you get a hard drive for your Amiga and you install a workbench and you have to get these VHD load. Is that what it's called?
Images? WHD load.
But using the GoTek, it's actually a floppy drive emulator. So you can load real floppy images, the ADF files. So you can play games that hasn't gotten a
WHD,
that's what it's called. Load image for it. So it works a charm for all these floppies you have.
Yeah, it's very easy to use as well. Easy to set up apart from butchering the inside of your case if you want to put the drive inside.
Is it floppy drive speeds?
Yeah.
It's
a floppy drive emulator, so it's exactly the same. So yeah, it's not the quickest, but...
I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, because this whole WHD load gives you too much at your disposal too quickly all the time. A bit like emulation, isn't it? Whereas I think that act of, and we've done this before in the podcast, that act of putting in a disc, or in your case, USB stick in the side, and loading a game, you kind of feel obliged to play it a bit more.
Yeah, especially just trying to get a game to load up on the 1200, because a lot of the games I enjoy are not... 1200 compatible from the off, you know, you still have to use reload kick and mess about with it that way to get some of the games to work. But yeah, you're right, it does make it feel not 100% authentic, but it's pretty close to the mark. And some of these GoTek drives have even got like a sound effect on it of the drive. My one hasn't, but I know you can get newer ones with a speaker on it.
I think I need to do it, because I've got the compact flash card. I think I need to do this just for completeness, because I've got a few 1200s kicking about, so I think I need to hack one around at least, or a 500. Maybe I'll put one in a 500.
Yeah, that might be better.
I've got a 500 sat on my desk now in the most terrible state. I won't expose who tried spraying it up, but someone tried spraying it appallingly. And he's given it to me as a project. It's a 1.2 kickstart version, and the floppy drive's long since dead. So I think that's a project for that one, and keep it as a butchered piece of rubbish, almost.
Yeah. And actually, if you don't want to mess around on the insides of your Amiga, you can have there are these GoTek adapters that you can plug it into the parallel port, I think it is, on the Amiga, so like you did with the normal floppy drives, the external floppy drives, and that works as well. You just need to hold down both mouse buttons when you're booting, and then you get a small menu. You can choose it's called DF1 as the boot device.
So I butchered my machine unnecessarily.
Well, not unnecessarily, right. Cheers, because not all games will actually accept being loaded like that.
I was going to say, that's what I thought was the case with a lot of them. Don't use the second disk drive, or
a lot of the older games won't accept being loaded like that.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. So how do you change a disk? How does that work?
It's just a button on the GoTek. You can just select whatever disk number you've placed the image on. It's nice. Yeah,
it's got
nice
a three-digit display, so you can have 1,000 images loaded, and then you just toggle up and down with buttons.
Yeah, nice. And that's one of the things on those new cases for the 1200. They've got a space for the GoTek in there already, and they've even got a space or a mounting point on there for Raspberry Pis. So it's been really thought about. But nice, excellent. I think that's going onto my Christmas list from someone, one of those GoTeks. Sounds great. Alrighty, should we crack on with the main event of this podcast? Because I think we're all gagging at the bit to talk about PC Fuzz.
You're listening to Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
So, like we said at the start, you guys picked some games for us. We went away and played them, and played them thoroughly. We didn't just watch them on YouTube. We played them and sat down with them. And in the case of one of these games, that was a bit of a chore. I'm sure we'll all agree. What game should we start with, fellas?
Well, let's start with the PC Fuzz, right?
Oh, yeah, let's. PC Fuzz came out on the Commodore 64 in about 1984, released by Anirog. Anirog, does that sound like the right pronunciation? Anirog Software.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, and I don't think...
That they've done lots of like copycat arcade conversions, clones. Okay. So
excellent. I don't think we're going to spend too long on this game, and I know Steve definitely wants to put his put his point forward on it. Anirog, did you know? I've just googled them or DuckDuckGo'd them, and they turned into Anko software. So they were to do with well, later on, Kickoff from Kickoff 2. Would you believe?
Wow.
Yeah. There we go. There's a little bit of a bit nugget for you. But PC Fuzz was nowhere near on that early Commodore 64 game. You play a copper or a policeman, depending on what part of the world you're from. I think it was quintessentially British, wasn't it? Judging by some of the shops in the background. And actually, do you know what? The graphics weren't that bad. Anyway, you play a policeman basically trying to take down thieves. That's all I could really ascertain from it. And you had a
thieves and punks on pogo sticks.
Of course, of course. In a sideways scrolling vertical fashion, and that's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, except that he's not really walking around with a truncheon. It's rather like a kind of sausage that he throws at people.
All the wrong connotations.
Look like a sausage. Plus, he's not walking, is he? He's on like a unicycle.
Oh yeah, that's true.
He's on a wheel, so it's a bit like Charlton and the Wheelies, which, Mads, I'm not too sure if you're aware of, but this was a show. Blimey, it must have been during the 70s. Early 80s, Charlton and the Wheelies. Yeah, really bizarre. And the music as well, I thought, sounded like something from, I don't know, one of those BBC programmes, you know, the kids' cartoons back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to say, I thought the sound effects, very, very old school Commodore 64, but I really like the sound effects. They had a charm to them.
The sound on this was the best thing about it. I didn't mind the music. That was it. Rhubarb and Custard, it kind of reminded me of. Not the actual theme music, but a tune they might have used in the show.
Mm.
But, yeah, the sounds... It's the C64, so it doesn't sound too bad. But the actual game, it's a strange one.
It's terrible, I think. It's very slow. The whole control method is really slow, and the way you throw your truncheon about, it's a bit random, really, when you first start off. You can throw it up, you can throw it forward, you can throw it slightly diagonal, I think I did a few times.
You can.
I found out how to throw it straightforward. It was just move right while you press the button, and if you didn't press any button didn't press any direction while pressing the button, he'd just shoot it at an angle upwards, like a 45 degrees angle.
Yeah, and up, you could shoot it upwards as well.
Could you?
But it acted more like a boomerang. It was like a boomerang function.
Yeah,
boomerang sausage. Where you want to look at it.
Money bags, didn't you, floating out of some of the shops, which I'm guessing, they were on balloons, and throw your truncheon upwards, and you collect the points for that. But just a very bizarre game. It's constantly scrolling to the right.
Yeah,
you can't actually make it stop scrolling, can you? I guess that's why they put the character on the wheel.
Scrolling very, very slowly to the right.
Yeah, it's just very frustrating to try and move the character around, especially to go backwards and, well, anywhere really. It's just not a very fun game. And this, I believe, was released either at $6.95 or $7.95 back in 1984. So it wasn't a budget game. If this had been released a few years later for $1.99, you can see they could get away with it, sort of thing.
Mm.
But paying $6 or $7 back in 1984, it wasn't loads of money, but that, to me, that's a full price game at the time, and I would have been very disappointed by it.
There was a lot better games coming out at the time. Don't get me wrong, it was still the early days of the C64, but there still was a lot better games. I remember a very early game called BC Tire, the BC's Quest for Tires, which was one of those early sounding and early looking C64 games, but horizontal scrolling game again, and it just, comparing it to this, probably the same price when it was released, just worlds apart. Beyond the Forbidden Forest, and Forbidden Forest come out around about the same time, for instance, just picking a couple of examples there. So really, really naff. But like any computer, you get those kind of rubbish games, don't you? It's just nature of the beast.
But I think this game actually has a few redeeming qualities. I mean, the graphics are not too bad. For example, there's this nice little feature where when the cars drive in, when you die, for example, a police car drives in and puts a new version of you into the game, or when the gangsters, when they pick up one of their bank robbers, those cars that drive, they actually drive over the scores and all of that. It looks pretty good, I think.
I think I was showing off a bit of hardware trickery there, or using a big hardware sprite to overlay the whole screen.
Yeah.
I like the, again, being seemingly quintessentially British, in the background you got things like Floyd's Bank, and there was a Manic Miner shop, wasn't there?
With the actual sprite of Manic Miner as well. They didn't seem to... Well, it's back in the early 80s. Copyright didn't seem to matter as much. But yeah, they did use a few sprites. There was a Pac-Man shop as well, I believe.
So...
Really, it could be a fun game, because the idea was you collect all the points that the bad guys are stealing from the shops, plus you've got to arrest the bad guys and put them in the police van.
Yeah.
And I think if the actual main character controls a bit more better and easier, then it probably could have been a fun game, but it just felt like the controls hindered it completely.
It was too slow, wasn't it? I think that's the letdown. It is just far, far too slow to be enjoyable.
Mm.
So, I don't think we enjoyed that one particularly as a game. Should we? I don't think we can even score it particularly. But I can't remember who suggested that game. I'm not sure whether it was one of their favourite games. I sincerely hope not. I don't think so.
I'm sure they've thrown that name in just to see how we would react to it. And I'd never heard of it before.
It wasn't released
on the Spectrum. So
I take myself as a reasonable Commodore 64 fan, but I hadn't heard it either. So I didn't know whether it even existed. But it does. It does, and it's pretty poor. Mads, anything more to say on this?
No,
piece of history.
So.
Blunt and to the point there. So yeah. PC Fuzz, not the best game in the world. We didn't really enjoy it, and I don't think any of us will go back and play that again. But
I'm going to load it on straight after this show.
put yourself to sleep with it. Wow. So let's move on to the next game on the list, something that's got a little bit more meat and substance to it. It's really Turtles.
Now, there was a bit of confusion over this, wasn't there?
There was. So when I pulled it out of the hat, that's the game that is, Turtles for the NES was listed. And we didn't know whether it was Turtles 1, which was a kind of platform game, or Turtles 2, the arcade, with conversion of the arcade. So we went for the one that looked better, rightly or wrongly, which was Turtles 2, the arcade. Having played the first one, didn't really think it would have been another howler, I think, on here. We didn't want two really bad games on here. I might have been the only one who thought it was really bad, but it wasn't looking great. So we chose the arcade version, which is a very popular game, wasn't it? And the NES version does a grand job of doing the arcade conversion.
Yeah, it's pretty nice conversion, I thought. Really nice presentation. There's a little bit of sampled speech in there, which I was surprised at, because you don't really hear the NES do much sampled speech. But I think what let it down for me was when you're fighting the foot soldiers, it doesn't feel like you're connecting when you're punching them.
It
didn't feel like that as much when you're battling the bosses, and you know, like the little robots that pop up off the floor, I felt like I was actually hitting them when the punches were connecting, and well, not punches, it's, you know, using weapons and flying kicks and what have you. But yeah, that was the only thing that let it down for me. But as an arcade conversion goes, by then, that point, the NES was pretty old hardware. This, I'm guessing, was released in 1991.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and the
1990
NES
and 91 in Europe.
Yeah, so the NES came out in, what, 86? So it wasn't mega old, but, you know, we was at the point where people were starting to buy 16-bit consoles. So, yeah, I think it held it up pretty well.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. It was tough as old boots, really, wasn't it, as a game? I mean, I'm surprised you don't like it more, Dean, being a sort of Double Dragon style game.
No, because I'll tell you what's happened recently with the arcade game is my son loves Turtles, and of course I've got the arcade machine, not the real arcade machine, but my main machine in the kitchen, and he saw that it had Turtles on it and he wants to play it constantly. Now, I enjoyed the game back in 1990 or whatever year it was released, but I didn't used to chuck too much money into it. Of course, with MAME, it's on free play, and it's just, it gets boring so quick. To me, it's a button masher of a scrolling beat 'em up. There's not much to it. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention with the NES version, is that when you continue, it throws you right back to the beginning of whatever level you're on, even if you're battling the boss. Yeah. Whereas on the arcade, obviously, you can just continue from wherever you are. So it adds replayability to it, but do you want to go through the entire level again when you've already got that far? And it's not something I would go out of my way to play a lot.
Yeah, I used to love the arcade game back in the day, so I played it quite a lot in the arcades. And being just a button masher, as you said, was perfect for me, because I'm not very good at these scrolling beat-em-ups at all. So not too much technical, not too many technicalities. You just push the button all the time. So that was pretty good. But this version, it was a bit too slow for me. But of course, it's just running on the old NES, so it doesn't have the power of the arcade machine, of course. But I liked it anyway. I think you're right about the punches not really going all the way through when you're fighting the foot soldiers. Also, I sometimes felt that the foot soldiers hit me without I could actually see that their punches would connect. So that was a bit annoying. But apart from that, I really liked it. But I'm still not very good at scrolling beat-em-ups. So I would always die at the boss in the first level when I played it this time. I forget if he's Rocksteady or Bebop, but one of those guys, the Rhino, that's the first boss, right?
Yeah. I enjoyed it as well. I liked the arcade game. I've even got a photo of me playing the arcade game as sort of an 11 or 12 year old. And it's one of my earlier memories of arcade machines alongside the likes of Outrun and so on. So I've got a certain sort of recollection of it from the old days. I enjoyed this. The music gets it. The music's good, but it gets a bit grating after a while because it just does the theme tune over and over and over and over and over ad infinitum.
It does change on different levels, though.
Oh, does it? That shows how bad I am at it. I didn't get very far on it. Although I did find a nice little tactic to just doing flying kicks half the time, and you could beat most opponents quite easily.
Did you guys? I've got to ask. Did you guys have trouble pulling off the jump swipe move?
Yes.
You know, in the arcade, you press jump and punch at the same time. You do the same here because it's only two buttons, obviously, on the NES. And to me, there seemed to be a problem pulling that move off. It was only doing it occasionally.
I figured it out at the end that you have to push jump just slightly before you push the punch button. And then you can
I think so, because then you just do a flying kick.
He does? Okay.
Well, yeah.
I didn't
maybe
really
it's my
find
pads.
Out how to do it.
I've only got one NES pad, so that might be the problem. Maybe it's on its way out. But I play Double Dragon 2 a lot on the NES, which to me is, if you want to play a scrolling beat 'em up on that machine, that's the go-to game.
Mm.
It's a very highly polished scrolling beat 'em up. I believe it's the better game. I know I'm mentioning Double Dragon yet again on a podcast, but yeah, that to me is the best beat 'em up on the system.
On the NES, right, okay. Yeah. Okay. I think certainly if you compare the NES Turtles to, say, the arcade Double Dragon, the arcade Double Dragon is even better as well. Like you said, the connecting of punches just felt a bit weak, and it just felt a little bit sloppy all round, didn't it? It just didn't feel like you're really playing the game specifically.
I think the arcade game has got the presentation down to a T. You know, you've got the music from the TV show. It looks lovely. It's a very nice looking game. Presentation is there. But I think gameplay wise, it does get very repetitive very quickly. It is a coin guzzler, as are most of the Konami scrolling beat 'em ups. You know, The Simpsons, you play that now and it just feels like a chore.
Yeah. And they did pad the levels a lot as well. I mean, they are like three times longer than they are in the arcade game. So
that's a good point. On the first level, for example, you got the flight of stairs where the ball bounces down.
Yeah.
Well, you get that twice on the NES version.
And you get a lot more just walking around and meeting foot soldiers than you would in the arcade version as well.
I guess it's because the arcade game's only so long and it probably doesn't take too long to complete on the arcade.
Yeah.
If you're buying it for a home console, you want your money's worth, don't you? So they've probably extended it a bit.
Definitely. Still a decent conversion, though. I think, certainly from my experience of it, and that was fairly limited, but it did play really nicely for the NES. A lot of flickering sprites going on, but that's quite NES-specific,
isn't it?
That's
common ground, isn't it, with the NES? But yeah, you're right. It's a good attempt at the arcade version.
And they did try to recreate all the cutscenes as well, and that was were quite good, I think.
Yeah, it did. It looks lovely.
Yeah, it does.
Do you feel the game, Dean, as a Double Dragon connoisseur? Is the arcade game still worse than Double Dragon? Put your bias aside for one moment, of course.
I think if it wasn't... How can I put it? If it didn't have so many enemies coming out all the time and it was shortened a bit, which it sounds crazy, but it just gets boring doing the same thing over and over again. With Double Dragon... The game can be completed within 20 minutes. Maybe that's why I enjoyed it so much. It was short and sweet, you know. Whereas with Turtles, it possibly is a better game, but it needs to be condensed down a lot more.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
Played it on any other platforms?
I played it on the Amiga and the ZX Spectrum and the Commodore 64. They're not great conversions. The Spectrum version I was quite happy with, but it lacks any in-game music, so it feels very hollow.
Yeah.
It takes a lot out of it without the music.
Mm. How about yourself, Mads?
I haven't played any other versions than this in the arcade, actually.
Yeah, same here. I've seen it on the C64 and it looks okay. Not too bad. I was a bit disappointed, actually, because on the first game on the NES, the original Turtles game on the NES, it had a really nice game mechanic, I thought, that every time you lost a life, you turned into one of the other Turtles. And it's a shame, to some degree, it didn't happen on this. Obviously, the arcade didn't have that, and you selected your character at the start. But I thought that was just a neat little touch on the platform game. So you had a different weapon each time you come out, obviously, with nunchucks for one of them, sword for the other one. I just thought that was a really nice little mechanic, which
On the arcade game, you could continue as a different turtle. You didn't have to stay as you originally selected, but yeah, it doesn't let you do that on the NES version.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Spectrum version on YouTube. It looks really good, actually.
It's nice graphically, and it plays well, but like I say, there's no in-game music, and it's strange because the Amstrad versions are identical, and both versions, if you check the disc or go into the code, the music is there, but it wasn't used, and I believe it slowed the game down too much, so it was removed at the last minute by the programmers.
Yeah, it does look a little bit sluggish as well, although it does look particularly nice, actually. I'm very impressed with that, as I often am with Spectrum arcade conversions. So I think it's the graphics that do it on the Spectrum, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do it. So, NES Turtles, I think we're quite happy with this game, aren't we? I found it quite enjoyable. It's a decent little game. So we'll see what Steve's got to say about that a bit later on the podcast. He's coming up in the next sort of half hour or so. Next game, gentlemen, where to next?
Well, that would be a pity if we go from release date, right?
Oh, we're going in chronological order, are we? Okay, that's good stuff. So, Pidia, arcade shoot 'em up on the Amiga. Very, very Japanese in its style. Very, very console-esque in its style. Music by Chris Hulsbeck, which I was a little bit surprised to see, actually, when I was watching the credits the other night. Great music on it, great graphics and so on. And it's got anyone into the storyline in it? Did anyone follow the storyline? I skipped through it to play the game.
Well, it had this nice anime-like intro where the master of dark magic, I forgot his name, but he turns some woman into... He attacks some woman with his army of insects. And then she gets poisoned, and her husband turns himself into a wasp and goes out to find the antidote. That's pretty much it, right?
It's not bad. Yeah. I've heard
it's pretty
worse
funny
thoughts.
With all those all the Japanese influences here, because this is a German game. All of the guys who've been working on it are German, like Chris Hulsbeck as well. So they definitely like their anime.
Yeah, there's a lot of recognisable names in the credits as well, and the credits seem to go on for ages. It's like a demo scene scroller. It goes on for about 5 minutes of so and so support and things like that. It's quite mad. But yeah, some very recognisable names, both from the demo scene and from game development. I would assume a lot of, you know, the likes of Factor 5 were involved in it. Obviously, Chris Hulsbeck was. But it's kind of like a love letter to other horizontal scrollers, isn't it? Because the gameplay is very normal. And I don't mean that in a negative way either. It's just standard horizontal shoot 'em up. But the graphics set it apart. And it had a weird lifespan on the Amiga as well, didn't it? It got released commercially in about 91, I believe. Didn't do particularly well. Then Team 17 bought it up and re-released it as a budget game. later on, about 94. So it's almost like it went a bit unknown and a bit undiscovered, and they saw some potential in it to re-release it as a budget game, which I think was, for me, sounds like a great move, really, with such a good game.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it was pretty well received by the reviewers from the 94 release, at least, but also from some of the 92 reviews, they get like scores in the 80s and 90s. But it is a very beautiful game, and it's a damn good shooter.
It is, it is. So you play a wasp, and I'm not sure whether that's a good thing, because I think we all want to be killing wasps rather than playing as a wasp. And you're just shooting various other insects, aren't you? And flowers, or you pick up flowers and so on. And some of the bosses are really unique. It's a, it's damn tough though, isn't it? I think you mentioned earlier, you know, in sort of text, Mads, that it was incredibly tough for you.
Yeah, it was definitely. In the end, I had to switch to playing it on an emulator and using my my arcade stick instead, and then it got a lot easier to control. I mean, playing it with my old SIP stick was very hard.
Mm. Yeah, Dean, what did you pick up on this game?
Well, I had this when it first came out on the first release, and I've always enjoyed it, but I've not. I don't like the setting, but that might be because I've got a phobia of wasps. I can't stand them. I'm like a big girl's blares if a wasp comes near me. So
anyone's got any fan mail for Dean, yeah, send him in a wasp.
Send me a dead wasp or anything like that, so I'll scream. But yeah, I've always enjoyed the game because, as you point out, Matt, it's got a very Japanese anime influence to it, and it felt more like a console game than a lot of the other shooters that were appearing on the Amiga at the time. And as I mentioned today, it had that option of being able to use two buttons. If you had a pad or a joystick that had the option of being able to use two separate buttons on the Amiga, which not many games had. There were a few, and this was one of the first that I discovered. And I had like a little arcade stick at the time. I think it's made by Quickshot. And I used to play this game quite a bit. And my cousin used to come around and we'd play it together. But I only had one two-button joystick. And he used to play the second player, which was like a little drone wasp. Because there was two options for two-player mode on this. You could either take turns, or you could control one of the drones. So you could have two players on the screen at once, which was really nice. Which I don't think a lot of people actually realise you can do, but it's there in the options if you mess about with it.
So did the drone actually take damage then when it's player controlled? Because the drones are invincible when you have them as a power-up.
I'm pretty sure. So I haven't played it in two-player mode this time around. I'm pretty sure you could get killed.
Okay.
If you were the second player. But it was just a very smart looking game. There wasn't many games on the Amiga that featured parallax scrolling at the time it first came out, you know. And it sounds, that tune that appears on the first level, very, very catchy.
Yeah.
You'll have to play a bit in the background. Yeah, it's just a very nice game, but like I said, I was never too keen on the setting. I always thought the storyline itself was ridiculous. But it felt, to me, it was something a bit different for the Amiga, because, as I say, you had lots of shoot-em-ups on the Amiga, but they all felt like computer game shoot-em-ups, whereas this felt more like a console game, which I think that's what they set out to do with it.
Oh, definitely. I think it's a game that keeps giving as well, because each level brings a whole new graphical style in. And going back to my sort of love letter analogy earlier on, one of the levels where you're working your way around a fish is a much like level 3 in R-Type, where you're working your way around the big ship. Although,
well, did you see the bit on, I think it's the second level, you've got a mole pop out of the ground. Fighting that. It's just mad creations, really. It's like...
One of the bosses is some weird baby thing that's been... looks like it's been mauled by an animal of some sort, and it's been patched up. So some kind of dull baby has been patched up and been mauled by insects. It's horrific, really.
Yeah, it's quite freaky. I mean, even the bonus stage, the first bonus stage you do, you're collecting, they look like baby angels, and you've got
cherubs.
The devil, the cherubs, really weird, but it makes it different and it stands out because of that. It's strange that the game did get overlooked. Maybe it just didn't suit people's tastes at the time, but to me it's a great shoot 'em up.
I think making it too hard was probably one of the downfalls
possibly,
of it. Because
yeah.
you know, you watch a long play on YouTube, and like I say, the game keeps giving. Parallax scrolling gets introduced on about level 4 or 5, which is very much like an R-type style level. And it really is sort of all these old shoot 'em ups all bolted into one with a great game around it, and you know, weird and wacky but incredibly unique graphics. You know, although we're saying it's like a console game, it's really not like anything that's come out before or since, is it? Other than
True. Is
that Produous game, which was like a bit of a parody of Gradius. Yeah. And that was very unique as well. But there's just some beautiful touches in it. It's got a Nemesis-style weapon system on it as well, where you can build up your weapons along the bottom of the screen, add-ons and so on. There's no R-type style. I forget what the little thing that adds on to
your ship is. So there's two options for that as well. You can either have it so it automatically upgrades you. It selects whatever you've picked up. Or you can have it so you use the second button and then select whatever you want to... like Nemesis and Gradius.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, have a look in the options.
But you do get little, like, those you call optionals or drones later on. So it is a bit like... Yeah, a bit like R-Type. But it's a very, very beautiful game. I mean, the attention to detail here is extreme, but you can't see most of it because you'll be just trying to survive all the time.
Yeah.
But there's, like, there are multiple levels of parallax. I love the little touches when all of a sudden a flower or a weed comes in front of you, so you fly behind it, and it's very, very beautiful. And the sound, of course, the music is perfect as well, and I like the sound effects as well. So it's all in all a very, very good shooter, one of the best Amiga shooters in my opinion.
Do you know what, I think you're right, and I've never given it a huge amount of time before we played it on this for this podcast. I've definitely played it before, just not giving it the time that I needed to. And I think if you'd have bought it at the time, you wouldn't have been disappointed with your, let's say it was full price at 20, 25 quid or whatever that was in Denmark. Free, wasn't it? Pirated in Denmark.
Yeah, of course.
but I think you'd have been happy with that price, and coming out as a budget game, even in 94 when AGA games were coming about, I don't think you'd feel shortchanged because it still...
It still looked the part, didn't it?
Yeah.
It still does now. And to me, it's a much better game than Project X, which a lot of Amiga owners just, do you remember Project X? Yeah, I remember it. I didn't like it. It wasn't that great. Whereas this is something a bit more special.
I think the most like-for-like game at the time was X-Out or Cross-Out, depending on the way you wanted to say it, on the Amiga, which I think... Was that Factor 5? I'm sure that was
No, that was... No? Oh, Arc Developments.
Oh, was it really?
It was released by Rainbow Arts, which is what Factor 5 used to have a lot of their games released under, same publisher. But Crossout. I had it on the Spectrum, funny enough. It was horrible on that.
But I think Crossout's probably the closest you'll get to it at the time. And they had the shop system on there as a more of a unique shoot 'em up, unlike, like you say, Dean, Project X, which I loved Project X at the time, but through the course of time, I've realised it's not a particularly brilliant shooter. It's okay. It's all right.
It's all right. And the speech on it is lovely, and some of the music, but it's just, gameplay-wise, I think this is a lot better.
It?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Epidia is one of those ones that really shows off... Well, it shows off the Amiga, certainly, and it shows off that there were better games than the upfront ones, which it did surprise me at the time that Team 17 chose to release something that was better than their own Project X, in my opinion, or re-release something.
It's funny that you mentioned that this isn't an AGA game, because in my mind it was an AGA game. It looks so good. I can't believe it's actually just the regular chipset.
sixteen color playfield. You can see on some of the levels where the parallax comes in, because when on the Amiga, as soon as you started using a different playfield, you had to drop the colors in half, so you had the same colors on both the playfields. But it's an amazing use. It's a bit like with the bitmaps games, an amazing use of the color palette.
Yeah.
And that is, but it's so bloody vibrant. I think, controversially, they must have been on drugs when they made this game.
I think, shooter fan or not, you have to check out Epidia for the Amiga if you like Amiga games at all. You have to just see it for yourself.
Definitely, couldn't agree more. So I'd go and check out, get yourself an emulator. If you like shooters on any platform, this is one to check out. It's beautiful. It's a great game. It's really tough, but so good. Again, you'll hear Steve's comments on that soon. But great game once again. We're coming up quickly to our very last game, aren't we? Which is Road Rash 2. Dean, do you want to talk about Road Rash 2?
Yeah, sure. So, Road Rash 2 is the second game in a 3D racing video game series by Electronic Arts, which sees the player racing in illegal races across American countryside, where you get to clobber your racing foes around the back of the head with bats and chains whilst dodging oncoming traffic and the police, who also happen to like motorbikes. Bit like Chips, remember that? I hadn't played the game much really up until last week, because I had the first game on the Amiga and it played more or less the same as the Mega Drive version. But the sequel, to me, it always, just looking at screenshots or just seeing the game running, it didn't look that much different. So I'd never really bothered with it, but I sat down and played it this week and I got really into it. I think there is more going on screen. You got more bikers in each race. You got the two-player mode, which I don't remember being present in Road Rash 1. Am I wrong on that? Or
is that a split-screen style thing?
Yeah, split screen.
Okay.
So yeah, it's got that, and it's more of the same, but it's great. It's got the right atmosphere. I love the way that the rogue of the hills and the physics all feel right. When you do hit a car, you really do feel it. You can just imagine what that biker's going through. Plus, it's so satisfying being able to just punch the other racers and the police. And the nice touch, and this was present in the first game as well, is you've got the mirrors, so you can see what's going on behind you. So if you do punch someone, you do see them tumble. And all different things happen to them. They can get run over, they can fly up in the air. So yeah, really good game. It's got a password saving system, which I was never that keen on. Just remembering all those codes. I'm never used to have a notepad by my Amiga. I have with my Mega Drive, so I've been using that. And there was a code that gave me a very fast bike. I can't remember what it's called, but it becomes absolutely ridiculous to control. You're constantly crashing because this thing goes so fast. As soon as you dodge one car, your bike's on the other side of the screen, and then you're trying to dodge a tree or lamppost or something. But yeah, great fun. How'd you guys get on with it?
Well, I'm not really that much into racers, but I like this game anyway. I mean, the fun of, as you say, punching the other guys so they fall off their bikes, and trying to outrun the police once you've accidentally hit one of their guys as well. That was great fun. And I like the whole upgrade system as well. Like when I play supercars, you buy new cars and all of that stuff. So you could upgrade your bikes here. And the music is excellent as well. I just realized it was composed by Rob Hubbard. So
yeah,
of course it must be good if he's involved. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I'm in such two minds about this game. So I think it's a fun game. I've never played Road Rash before. I've seen it before, so I've never owned it.
Because it's quite choppy in places, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I found it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I found it fun, but I couldn't help comparing it to what I do love is Super Hang-On, both arcade and the Mega Drive and even the Amiga versions. It's, you know, the frame rate's much better. It feels like when you move your joystick, the game responds to it perfectly. And Road Rash is a bit clunky in that way. And it has been since the first one.
Although it is a racer, it isn't.
And that's the thing.
It's a strange game. I think it's more about messing about. And
I'm glad you said that, because what my overall feeling of it was, I don't really know what I was trying to achieve. I didn't feel like I was in a race, particularly. I had great fun smacking people around and trying to get them off their bikes. And I did like the fact you need to run and get your bike again if you fall off it. But I don't know, there's something about it. And the same with when I saw the original and since seeing the 3DO on YouTube as well, that I don't really click with. I think the engine is a bit choppy for me. I do like my frame rates to be a lot smoother than that. So I think that's what's sort of making me feel a bit bad about it. And I reckon the engine is based on the old test drive engines, which Electronic Arts did, because you got the mirrors and so on. So I think it's almost like an evolution of that. And just like Apidia, with the sound effects on, it sounded like I was driving a wasp.
I could try it with the sound effects on.
Don't.
Funnily enough. With the normal setting, you have the punch sound effects and the weapons, because you can steal weapons off the other guys as well, which is great stuff.
Yeah.
Matt, did you ever play the original on the Amiga?
I didn't. And I always, what I read was that it was a bit of a poor cousin of the Mega Drive version, but I don't know whether that's doing an injustice.
It was, but it had different music, and I really enjoyed the music on it. I think I've mentioned on the podcast a long time ago that I used to play that on a Sunday afternoon, and to me it seemed like a Sunday afternoon drive out on a bike along long country roads. I used to find it really relaxing, which is strange since you're clobbering people and getting run off your bike. But yeah, try the Amiga version and then come back to the Mega Drive version.
I'm looking at it on YouTube now, and actually the engine looks less choppy than Road Rash 2.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's, to me, the first one on the Amiga didn't seem to be as choppy, whereas with this, I loaded up the first one again this morning, matter of fact, and just to check, because I thought I was going mad, but there does seem to be a lot more going on the second one. You know, there's more bikes in each race and just a bit more on screen compared to the first one, so I should imagine they've modified the engine so it can handle a bit more on screen, but the frame rate does tend to suffer a bit. But I think it's probably more enjoyable than the first game.
What I need to do is take my head out of the fact that it's a racing game, because it really isn't deep down. Okay, you've got to get to the end and you're supposed to win it, but there's more fun in there than what I'm giving it credit for with the beating. Does beating people up actually achieve anything other than knocking them off their bike? Do you get more score, or do you get points for killing people?
No, I think it's more the cutscenes, and you know, they start bantering with you.
Yeah.
And they're out to get revenge. I can't remember if it actually does affect the gameplay though that much. But
I couldn't see it discernibly.
No.
It was enjoyable though. I genuinely enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I just didn't see there was a huge amount of point to the actual game. And you've said it now. Maybe there isn't a huge amount of point. It's just about having a bit of fun and knocking people around a bit.
It's extremely satisfying just racing all along the entire race, and just before you get to the end, you get up to side by side to the guy who's been in lead all the time, and you knock him off your bike, and then you win. That's what this is all about.
Or the reverse can happen to you as well. I was in first place for ages, and then right last minute I hit a car and ended up like fifth or something. What you can do, you can run through the checkpoint. My bike was right near it, but I thought I'll try it. And yeah, sure enough, you can actually just walk over the finish line and it accepts that. Yeah,
it's some really nice touches in it. There's definitely some really nice touches. And I think, like you say, the mirror's real genius bit of coding there, I think, to show you what's going on around you, so you can hear them coming, you can see them coming, so it can add a little bit of tension to the game.
But thinking about this game as a racer instead of just a brawler, I thought the sense of speed was actually quite good, especially when you had to pass the cars and the other drivers. The only thing I had a bit of a problem with was the floaty controls, actually.
Yeah,
they didn't feel
coming from.
Just spot on there, so yeah.
It feels like, with the choppy frame rate, it feels like the controls are responding at that frame rate rather than to your actual input. So it's relative. It's relative, but it doesn't feel slick. It feels like there's a delay before your man does his move. But
yeah, and then you often end up on the side of the road where you didn't mean to.
Yeah. It's very forgiving though, isn't it? Because, you know, you can jump in the air, land at the side of the road, just miss a tree and you don't come off. So I think it's got a nice element of not being too harsh on the player, let's put it that way. Definitely not. I'm going to go back and play. This is one of the games I will go back and play. Definitely. There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah. Give that Amiga version a try as well.
I definitely will. Definitely will. Especially if there's better music in it. Because unlike you, Mads, I thought the music, certainly for Rob Hubbard, wasn't one of his finest hours. But then again, the music in Indianapolis 500 by Electronic Arts was by Rob Hubbard as well. And that was, in my opinion, compared to his genius composers on the... rather compositions on the C64, just felt a little bit weak. But very American. He definitely had sucked up the American vibe when he moved over there.
Yeah, that may be it.
I'm just watching on YouTube, there's a some kind of hacked version or a non-standard emulator you can get which speeds the frame rate up to nice and smooth.
Oh, right.
Without actually affecting the speed of the game. So there's something. It's a bit,
sounds interesting.
It's a bit glitchy, but it looks a bit more fun.
How cool would it be to get a modern remake of Road Rash? The consoles now really do have the technology to do something even more special with that game, and I'm surprised EA haven't gone for it yet. I know there's been attempts to bring it back, but it just hasn't happened. I think it'd make a great modern game,
if not certainly a fan remake or an indie game remakes with a similar kind of atmosphere.
I think there might be one on the way, actually.
I'd be interested in that. I would be interested in that. Just talking about it here and hearing both of you wax lyrical about it has changed my view on it.
But there was a Road Rash released for the Sega Saturn, so there are some a bit more modern versions, right?
Is there?
Yeah, I think there was a version on the PlayStation as well. There's a few versions. You had Road Rash Jailbreak, was it?
Okay.
Yeah, there are a few newer versions, but today's consoles and PC could do something really special with it.
Wasn't the 3DO always deemed to be the best version of it?
Yeah.
Well, I might check it out on the PlayStation. It looks quite smooth, actually, the PlayStation version. Again, just checking out on YouTube, it looks quite decent, actually. So that's a really good... I think we've ended on quite a nice game there, overall. And we've got Steve's views coming up shortly on the podcast for part two. Anything more to say on the games, gentlemen, before we fly Steve in from his Liverpudlian household?
I've had fun playing them. I really have, because it's not often I get to play so many games in a week, whereas normally I might just get the odd half an hour and I'll just play one game. It's actually forced me to play some games a bit more, and I've enjoyed it.
I'd agree with that. The being forced to play a game sometimes feels like a chore, but actually you end up maybe finding a gem, and I think we found a gem here properly in Apidia, and Road Rash 2's definitely worth replaying again.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the listeners for giving us all these different games to choose between, even the guy who suggested PC Fuzz.
But you've got to play some of these stinkers, haven't you? You know, to appreciate the better games out there.
Definitely. You know, one person's stinker is another person's brilliant game.
I apologise if you really enjoyed that game.
We all like some games that other people don't like. But yeah, it's been great to try these out, and shortly on the podcast we'll get Steve in and let you know what he thinks about them. Yep, Steve, over to you, my friend.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Oh, fine, thanks.
Good. So, obviously, I've missed the entire show. How did it go?
Wonderful. Where have you been?
I've been in work, and then I play football. I know none of you like football, so, you know, I won't get into the ins and outs of my game of football. But,
That's no excuse. You know I'm a slave driver. Don't be late again.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Is that a strike against my name?
Oh, it is, yeah. Black mark.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to do lines. Dean makes me do lines and detention when I've been bad. Do not be late again. 1,000 times. No, but like I said, I've been playing footy. So I've just jumped out of the shower, feeling healthy for a change. So how did the conversation about the four games go?
Really well. Really well. How did you find them? You've been playing them?
Yeah, I've had a quick blast on a few of them. I'll be honest, I didn't spend much time on PC Fuzz.
Why not?
Why?
It's a great game.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really, truly shows off the strength of the C64, doesn't it?
Yeah. Silky smooth scrolling, great music, great gameplay.
Sausage throwing. What on earth is that game about? Honestly, he's a policeman, but he's got a flashing light on his helmet. He's got a wheel instead of feet, and he throws a sausage. What's going on?
I think there's a playable game in there somewhere if the controls had worked better. That's what I was saying earlier.
Well, I suppose. It's really sluggish, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
I gave it... I really tried. I gave it at least 4 minutes...
This weren't just on YouTube, was it, Steve?
No.
You actually played it.
I went to the effort of downloading the ROM, transferring it across to my Raspberry Pi, booting it up on my new little arcade machine, working out all the controls in the bloody emulator to get it running on my arcade machine, started playing it and thought, what the f*** is this?
Well, I've done that on the real hardware and still thought, what the f*** is this?
Oh, man. Did you use it? So, have you got the actual game, or did you just put it on a memory card?
No, I downloaded it. I was naughty. It's not one in my collection, funnily enough. I don't know why.
I don't think it's in anyone's collection, mate. It's one of them things you tape over.
But I can see, seriously, I do think it could have been quite a playable game if you could control the character a bit better. Cause as you say, it feels very sluggish, unresponsive. If you could move about on it. You know, move your copper about on his wheel and actually be able to arrest the guys without just feeling like you've been cheated, because sometimes just as you're moving by a door, they come out the door and you lose a life. It's a very strange game, because as I said before, the screen is constantly scrolling. I guess that's why they gave your character a wheel. They didn't know how to stop the scrolling, the programmers. Maybe, I don't know. But
I think they didn't know how to animate feet.
Yeah, possibly.
That's why they give them a wheel.
Yeah. But I won't go on too much. I'll let you speak about it. Otherwise, this podcast is going to be a few hours long.
Well, I know you guys have already spoken about all the games, so I won't go on either, but I thought it was terrible, to be honest. I'm going to give it 2 sausages out of 10. that's what I'm giving it. Do we know who shout-out it was on Twitter or on the forum?
I don't, I'm afraid.
Well, whoever it was, you're banned. No, I'm joking. but what I'd like them to like get in touch with us either on Twitter or on the forum and explain either why they told us it, or do they love it, and why? Or do they hate it and they were just being sadistic?
I hope they didn't like it, because we probably would have offended them. I think they've chucked it in there just to see
what would happen.
What would happen, yeah, if we'd enjoy it or not.
Well, fair play to them. I mean, but it must have been a budget game.
No, it wasn't, because at that time there wasn't really budget releases. This was 1984 when it was released.
It would have
been around $6.95 or $7.95. I would have felt pretty cheated if I'd bought it.
Because you'd have to wonder what was out at the time.
Well,
what were the other big titles?
You had stuff like Bruce Lee at that time, you know, which was a very fun, playable game on the C64. So, yeah, there was lots of good games out. Beachhead, that sort of thing.
No excuse then.
No.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Okay. Moving on.
Yes.
Moving on from that. Washing my hands of Mr. Fuzz. So what was next? What did you talk about next? Turtles. Okay, so I had a play of that before I went out this evening.
Now, what one did you actually play?
Turtles 2, the arcade game on the NES.
Yeah.
Is that the right one?
Well,
yeah, that's the one we were playing as well.
That's the one we've played, but it's probably the wrong game.
I think whether it was the wrong game or the right game, at least we got to play this one, not the other one.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's a bit repetitive, but it's just got some nice effects on the NES. I love the fire across the bottom of the screen on the first level. Didn't get to the second level, so I don't know what's on that, because I got battered at the end. But it's nice. It's like it's similar to like the arcade machine, sort of.
The sprites are nice. A little bit longer drawn out. The levels are a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, as I say, a bit repetitive with the levels, because it takes quite a long time to get to the end of that level.
Yeah.
And you're sort of getting a bit of repetition in the enemies and that. But I thought it's got some nice moves. The graphics are nice. The character sprites are nice. The bad guy sprites are nice. Some nice effects as well. I noticed as you come along the corridor, big massive sort of cannonballs bouncing down the stairs.
Yeah, the presentation on it's pretty good, I thought.
Really nice. Yeah. Nice bit of music. I liked the bit when I got to the next room that had, what was her name, the girl in it?
April.
April was sort of standing by the desk, and you had to fight all the bad guys off, and then the sort of big like rocket cylinder thing come up out the floor before you sort of fought the big bad guy, which I can't remember his name. Was he called Ghetto Blaster or something?
He was Bebop or Rocksteady, that's their names, wasn't
it? Yeah.
That was it. There you go, I was close. But I couldn't beat him. He battered me.
Yeah,
I did find that the main way of attacking just seemed to be like jump up in the air and do the diagonal kick, jump up in the air and do the diagonal kick.
But then he'd just shoot you at an angle.
Yeah, and sometimes he'd get his kick in time, so you'd do your jump and he'd kick and you'd bounce off it. So I got battered at that point.
Yeah, that section particularly is pretty faithful to the arcade, I think.
Yeah.
So did you guys notice a small graphical error as well where if the sprites were all the way to the left-hand side of the screen, a small part of them would be displayed at the right-hand side as well? I would always think that an enemy was coming when it was actually just moving in the other end of the screen, at the other side.
Kind of thing with a lot of the NES games, though, don't you? You get like corruption on one side of the screen, which I don't think would have been visible on a normal CRT TV. I played it on a LCD display because I was trying to film it at the same time. I'm pretty sure when I've played it before in the past on my CRT, that part of the screen isn't quite visible.
What about you, Miles? What were you
playing it on?
Well, I was playing it on my Famicom, but I hooked it up to an LCD right now because my CRT was in the other room. So,
I do remember reading recently, I mean, Dean's right in the fact that these... the NES and a few others had sort of like a wraparound area that was always off screen that they would use for certain tricks. I remember, I think the other computers did it as well. There's an area to the left on the Commodore 64, like a display field or something. Or it might have even been the Spectrum. I won't start talking about the next. but I'm sure Jim Bagley was mentioning it. Something to do with the like left-hand side of the screen, something being off, and you use it for scrolling and a wraparound. I don't know the technical bits, but I have heard something mentioned about the edges of the screen.
I think you get it on the Mega Drive as well with certain games. If you use a SCART connection, you get a certain part on the screen for the music.
Well, that's interesting. I'll definitely have to try it on my CRT now.
Yeah,
see, get the same thing. Yeah. I did notice that, and I don't know if this was normal, but the sprite for Bebop or Rocksteady was black and white.
Yeah, they've like shaded it with lines,
Was that normal, was it? It wasn't just my setup?
No, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've recently bought a second Raspberry Pi.
Ah.
Which I've got hooked up in the living room now to my 50-inch plasma. And just and I've the latest version of RetroPie allows you to sync like a PS4 controller permanently, so you don't have to like pair it every time. You just do it once, and you change a setting, and then every time I boot the Raspberry Pi up, I just press the PS button and it syncs, locks up. So it's fantastic, and just sit on your couch with a big giant telly playing NES games is fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds like a sweet setup.
Yeah, I'm loving it. On mine, obviously, I would have had the overlap if I'd been paying attention. But I was too busy getting my ass kicked. So, but yeah, like I say, I think it's a good arcade conversion. I enjoyed it. I would like to have got a bit further and seen some of the levels, see if there's a bit of variation in them. But from what I saw, I was quite impressed with it. So what was the next game? What did you play after that?
That would be Apidia.
Oh, man. Best game on the list.
Yep.
Best game on the list, possibly the hardest game on the list as well. It's brutal, isn't it?
It's really
hard.
It's really good though. I've only had an hour or so to play on it, and I really want to have come back to it and have a proper crack at it, because I heard that you didn't get past level 2, Mads.
Actually, I got past the praying mantis and then somewhat into the next stage there. But yeah,
it's
pretty good.
I couldn't get off of level 2. I've been playing the game for years on and off, and I still can't get off the level, so I am rubbish.
Well, I found that I was playing it on my Amiga initially, using my SIP stick, and that was really, really hard, so I booted up in an emulator and used a real arcade stick instead, and that made it a whole lot easier.
Well, I was, once again, using the Raspberry Pi setup, but did you notice there's an option to have a second fire button?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was actually using, it's not an official Commodore CD32 pad. It was a, I don't know if it's Competition Pro one or something. They were third party ones, and I was using that on the Amiga. So yes, nice. I was saying earlier on, you know, that it's got that option, and it makes it feel a bit more like a console game than a computer game.
So did you notice you could actually switch between joystick and pad controls before you start the game? Yeah, that made a big difference. You had to choose pad if you have a proper control pad, actually.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? Because I was just playing it using the PS4 controller, but I didn't really switch them options. I didn't know.
As far as I can tell, it just controls, your character controls slightly slower when you choose pad, because you don't have that fine control as you have with the stick.
Yeah, so, don't whiz about so much, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly.
I did find that if you powered up your speed too much, that's just a recipe for disaster.
Like in most shooters.
It's because there's a lot of stuff on screen, and there are certain points where it gets really tight. Even in the first level, I found a bit when I think there's like a mushroom on the floor and it's firing rocks up into the air.
Actually, you have to pick up what it's firing up into the air. I tried to avoid it in the beginning, but you have to pick it up because that's a power-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It gives you invulnerability for a while.
Invincibility? No way.
Yeah.
I was dodging that. I thought that's going to hit me.
Pick it up.
Pick it up. I'll catch it as it comes up.
Yeah.
Oh, no way. That's brilliant. So, yeah, because what I was doing, I was dodging that. And most of the time, cause just after that happens, there's a swarm of wasps.
Yeah.
And they're a nightmare. And I was trying to dodge the mushroom firing the two things up into the air and then flying straight into the swarm and trying to dodge that as well. And half the time, I was just getting killed at that point. And I think you mentioned as well, Mads, on our chat, once you've lost your power-ups, you might as well give up.
Well, yeah, that's, again, something it has in common with a lot of shooters of that age. Yeah, if you lose your power-ups, or if you die, like, once or twice, you might as well just restart the game because you can't advance any further. If you die once and you have a lot of power-ups, you won't get back to scratch. You get, like, a couple of levels of power-ups deducted. But if you die twice, it's all over.
Yeah. But it's a superb game, and I really do want to go back and see if I can progress quite far on it. I need to know what your top score was, Mads, so I can try and beat it.
I'll try to find that.
So that was superb. I thought that was brilliant. And then the last game would be Road Rash 2.
That's correct. Yep.
Was it Mega Drive that we were playing this on?
It was.
Yes. Yeah. Only managed to have a quick go with this, but I liked it because I am a fan of my races, but I found the actual driving down the road a little bit sluggish and a bit, because you're going up and down hills as well, aren't you? And I found it just a bit sluggish on the controls, but an enjoyable game. I like it when you manage to kick other people off their bikes and stuff. It's a nice touch to it. But like I say, I didn't find it controlled as nicely as something like a Lotus Esprit or an Outrun or anything like that, or even like a Super Hang-On. I found it sort of drifting across the road and I'd go all over the place as you were going around corners and that. But,
have you played any of the series before, Steve?
Once again, only really briefly played Road Rash 1, but not really got into it and got deep into it. Does it offer anything more apart from racing down the road and just knocking other people off their bikes?
You get to upgrade your bikes and... No, not really. But I do think it's an enjoyable game. I would recommend giving the Amiga version of Road Rash 1 a try.
Okay.
You might prefer that. The frame rate on it, I think, is slightly smoother than the Mega Drive version of Road Rash 1. With Road Rash 2, they had increased the traffic in the game, the number of races, so I think the frame rate does take a hit. But I think it's a very fun game, and I enjoy the physics on it. But I can see, why some people wouldn't like it. To me, it's not just about the racing. It is more about the hitting and collecting the weapons and upgrading your bike rather than just racing.
Well, it's a bit of an evolution of Chase HQ or something, isn't it? Because you're essentially racing down the road and then
trying to batter other vehicles. To that, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. But I did enjoy it, and I need to go back and give it a bit more.
It is seen as the best one out of the series, really, part two.
Yeah. On the Mega Drive as well.
Yes, yeah.
That's the definitive.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Was it released on the SNES, Road Rash? I can't think. I don't think it was.
I don't know. Mads will know. Mads.
No, sorry.
Put you on the spot.
I'll just put you on the spot.
The first one was released on the Amiga, and obviously there were sequels on other systems, such as the 3DO and the PlayStation and N64. But I don't think the original three, apart from the Amiga version of part one, appeared elsewhere. So,
well, like I say, an enjoyable game, and I think I will go back and give it another pop. But when I play something like Lotus Esprit 2, I'm instantly into it because it's responsive and I'm enjoying it.
They're very smooth games as well, aren't they?
Really responsive, and whereas I found that a bit like I was chugging along a bit and I'd try and get around a bend and I was veering all over the place.
I think that's the whole idea, though, really. It's got over-the-top controls. It's getting yourself back into control, when you've jumped over the bonnet of a car. And as I said, the feature I like on it is you've got the mirrors and you can see what's going on behind you. So if you knock someone off a bike, sometimes you'll see them roll and then they'll get hit by a car or...
Nice.
It's got some nice touches to it.
Yeah. Well, I will go back and give it another pop. But I enjoyed it. It certainly wasn't the worst out of the bunch that we did. That was PC Fuzz, which I never want to see ever again. But yeah, so like I say, good, decent four games. Well, a decent mixture of four games to play. But I think of the four, Epidia was the one for me. Enjoyed Turtles, and I'll go back and give Road Rash 2 another pop.
And it was nice that we got to play on four different platforms as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the beauty of it. I think, I think this is something we should do again in the future. And, it's different, isn't it? Because normally we decide ourselves what we're going to talk about and what we're going to play and stuff. And to have the community out there instead pick for us, you get things coming out of the hat that you'd never think of yourself.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because normally we'll always play games that we like ourselves. So it's funny to actually be forced into playing other stuff as well.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to play PC Fuzz again. I think it's a good concept. I think we should do it again.
I think you need a stinker in there. It makes you appreciate the other games even more.
True, this is true. So, obviously you guys have spoken at length about these games anyway, and I've just caught up for a little bit of a roundup. But before we call things a day, Mads, can we have a bit of an update on the High Score Gaming Club?
Yes, 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 the Retro Gaming Club. We're playing Mega Man at the moment. So I think it was Clumsy Colin who suggested Mega Man as one of his five picks, and we voted on it, and Mega Man was the winner. And on the NES, of course, the original first Mega Man. And I don't know about you guys, but I've been having great fun playing Mega Man. Mega Man is one of the series that I've actually never played before. I have a few big gaps in my NES knowledge. I never had a NES back in the day, so I'm only just catching up. And Mega Man is a game that I've always heard about, and I always heard that it was very, very tough, and that is true. I stink at Mega Man right now, but it's also a game that you can feel yourself getting better at for each time you play it, and that's a great satisfaction playing a game like that. So by now I can beat two bosses almost every time, and I'm slowly working my way forward, learning how to defeat the other bosses and get through their levels. So how about you, Steve? Have you played the game at all?
I've had a couple of goes at it, and I need to come back to it, but my God, it's hard. It's like they designed the game and went off, and the design brief was, make every level like it's the last level. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because I basically booted it up, and you've got like, is it six levels you can choose from, like the six different bosses? And I thought, oh, this one's got to be the easy one, so I'll go with this one. Oh, no, that must be the really hard one. Hang on, I'll try a different one. No, that must be the really hard one. I'll try one of the other ones. Oh, right, they're all absolutely nails.
Yeah. And again, you have to defeat the levels in the right order, because when you defeat one of the bosses, you get his weapon, and you can use that in the later levels. I haven't really gotten into that part of the game myself yet, but I'm just learning about it. But yeah, you're right. Some of the levels are very, very tough. For example, try the Electman level. That's impossible. Unless you have some other boss's weapon and you can do some stuff there, and I haven't figured out how to do that myself yet. Or, for example, I think it's Gutsman, the level with Gutsman, when you've just moved like one screen to the right, and then you have to ride these platforms, that moving platforms. So moving platforms, well, that's okay, we've done that in a lot of games, but these platforms also tilt sometimes just to throw you off. I can never get past that right now, but I'm getting better at it, and it feels good to play a game like that.
Yeah, that's the level I tried last time I played it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, if you start with that level, you just end with a rage quit and never play the game again.
That's most of the levels, Mads. It's you're obviously a lot better at it than me, because you've got to a boss in the first place. What's the best level to start on? What's your tips?
I think I always start with Bomb Man, but I'm not sure what the best way through is. I found a small strategy guide that I haven't read yet, but I want to just try and play it perhaps for an hour or two more by myself, and then I'm going to read that strategy guide and see if I can get through it. There is one specific order that's the best, I think.
I'm going to have to do a fair bit of research into this, Mads, because it's infuriatingly hard. Have we got any scores up yet on the high score table?
Yep, we do. I have to say, just right now, Damien has written on our forums and he's wiped the floor with all of us. He's just defeated all of the standard bosses. And then when you defeat all of the standard bosses, you get to the Dr. Wily levels, I think. And he got 735,100 points. And I think that the next best score is like half that. Just give me a second here. And the next best score right now is the T-Man with 397,000. And then Variable with 254. And then me with 242. And finally, we have Phoenix Z80 with 132,000. So there's plenty of room to improve here. It'll probably be hard to beat that very high score, but we should have a good battle for the second place at least.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not doing too bad then, because I've got, like, you know, 3,000. So that's...
That's very good, Steve.
Yeah, not too bad at all. I'm nearly there. I'm on my way.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get you some Mega Man training wheels you can put on.
Oh, my word. Dean, how are you getting on with it?
I haven't played it at all, ever. which I'm quite ashamed of, really, because it's a big series, isn't it, the Mega Man series? Yeah. I've not played one game out of that series, which is a bit embarrassing, but I will rectify that. I will give it a try over the next week, so we'll see how we get on, but I doubt if I'll get anywhere near a decent score.
I have no hope of getting into that high score table at all.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
But if you do have the time, please dedicate some time to this game, because it's a beautiful game. When I'm done with playing this, I'll have to play Mega Man 2, because apparently that's the best game in the early series. So I'll have to try that as well.
Cool.
Just on a slight tangent, did any of you see Mighty No. 9?
It came out just recently, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's got not very well reviewed, I think.
It's terrible.
Okay.
It's absolutely terrible.
But it was still by Keiji Inafune, who did the original Mega Man games, eh?
Yeah, it's like he took every single thing that's great about Mega Man and got rid of it.
Okay.
Honestly, it's the most... I think it was Kickstarted, wasn't it? It was crowdfunded.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, oh my word. It's just... Because I played Mega Man in the past, so I knew Mega Man is super hard. Super hard, but, you know, but the thing with Mega Man is it's if you die in Mega Man, it's your own fault. It is absolutely nails, but you can learn the patterns. You can learn... There's a bad guy here, he's going to shoot bullets here, the fire goes up there, that platform's over there, and it's down to you to, like, knuckle down and get better and work out the patterns and time your jumps and, you know. But when you die in Mega Man, it's still your own fault. In Mighty No. 9, it's just a generic sort of run, you don't get killed. This so you could get, you know, you could clock a level without dying once. It's just like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like a... It's not like it's not from the same developer. It's like it was like a fan game almost. It's just got none of it. It's got none of the tight physics. It's got none of the tight gameplay. You know, check it out. Have a look on YouTube for yourself and see what you think. But I played it and was absolutely massively disappointed with it.
So did they retain the pure 2D feel, or is it one of those 2.5D games?
Two and a half D.
Oh damn. I hate when they do that to the remakes.
Yeah, so do I, mate. I think that they're ugly, in my opinion. And one of the things that you lose when you go 2.5D is you lose your pixel perfect jumping and timing and everything, precision, because it's made in a 3D engine and they don't have that pixel perfect.
Yeah, I think so few games does that really, really well. I mean, Klonoa on the PS1 is the only game I can think of on the top of my head that does 2.5D perfectly.
I think the new Mario games... sort of the 3DS ones and stuff like that. I think they will have probably got it right, just knowing Shigeru Miyamoto.
Are they? I thought they were pure 2D as well. Okay.
No, I think they're using like sort of 3D-ish sprites and stuff. I think it is 2.5D.
Yeah.
The new Super Mario, is it called New Super Mario Brothers?
Oh, the one on the DS, not the 3DS, but the DS.
The DS one, maybe, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's 2.5D.
But it feels like a 2D game when you're playing.
They'll have the physics like absolutely perfect. But yeah, have a look at Mighty No. 9, but don't buy it because it's terrible. But yeah, I will give Mega Man another attempt. I will try. I'm off tomorrow, so I might give it a few hours and see if I can do a bit better. But so far, I've got about 3,000. I'm not threatening anyone's score this time around.
There's room for improvement there.
I might have to get you on Telegram. You can send me some gameplay videos, Mads. Show some of your tricks.
Yeah.
Awesome. So should we round the show up, guys? Because I know you've, I know I've only been on for a little bit, but it's, I know you guys have recorded for a good while before that.
Yep.
Awesome. Any shout outs to anyone before we call it a day?
Nah, just shout out to the retro gaming community in general. We love you guys, and we'll keep up all the good work with all the other podcasts. And that's it.
Awesome, Dean.
No message. I hate everyone. No. Alex, Nintendo Arcade, he's in hospital at the moment, so. Quick get well message to him. I hope you're feeling better, mate. I think it's his appendix ruptured, so he ended up in hospital. So if he's listening to this, get well soon.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Get well soon. And next time we see you, bring some of those cool arcade games with you, and I'll try and get a decent score on them. Cool. Okay, guys. Well, it's been an enjoyable show, so hopefully we'll see you next time.
Yep. Take it easy, guys, and keep playing those games.
See ya.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
This was a Castaway Media production. Find more great podcasts on our network. Visit castaway.media.